That's the worst way to get banter.
Yeah, seriously, you killed
if you
the
guys
banter vibe.
Be spontaneous, now would be the time to do it. We'll get there. All right, shall we start?
Okay.
All right. Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the incidentally young, occasionally hip, and blissfully lay editors of American media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Zach Davis.
Hey, everyone.
And Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
How are you guys doing?
Freaking wonderful.
Pretty good.
Happy Feast Week.
Happy Feast
Week.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Happy Feast Week.
It's like Shark Week for Jesuits.
We have
but better.
Two big Jesuit feast days this week, which yeah. first was
Kicked
Harry Potter.
Harry
oh,
Potter.
Shoot. No, I always get those two confused. St. Ignatius was on Monday.
Yep. And today, is, or yesterday, was Peter...
No, that's... Well,
today?
Wednesday.
Yeah.
When we're recording, this is St. Peter Favre. St. Peter Favre, who, like Brett Favre, gets his name mispronounced quite a bit.
Nice. What did we do to celebrate here at the office?
Well, we had Mass. Father Matt Malone said Mass for us at the Jesuit community, and then...
And then we feasted.
Then we feasted on some sandwich platters.
It amuses me that we don't get St. Ignatius Day off, but we get St. Patrick's Day off.
I know. Every year, I wonder the same thing. Well, not that I complain about getting
St. Ignatius
Day off,
is good for business, though, right?
You know? That's true. If we have to be here to make the memes.
Yep. Who would make the memes if we were off playing?
Very true. All right, Zach. What's on tap?
So today we had a cocktail made by our guest. I actually missed... what the name of this was?
It's called a patty melt.
A patty melt.
But that's when it has an Irish whiskey in it. We only had bourbon. So we are calling it a maker's melt.
Okay. So our guest, Kara Eschback, does cocktails in her free time. And so she kindly offered to treat us to one. So a maker's melt, which was delicious. You can find a version for this recipe and the Death & Company cocktail book, which is a world famous cocktail bar here
yes,
in New York.
Yes, and in case you feel like you're in a time warp, we recorded the interview before we recorded the introduction
Thank
to the interview.
Thank you for explaining that.
She mixes drinks on her free time, but professionally, she's the editor-in-chief of Verily magazine. So we'll be talking to her about how she and the other people in her company work to empower women and sort of combat the whole photoshopping that we see in a lot of other women's magazines. I read a lot of women's magazines growing up, 17, Teen Vogue, and I always wanted to be like all of the teenage pop stars that I saw in there.
Yeah.
What about you, Ashley?
I just never really bought into celebrities.
That's smart.
I was kind of a tomboy nature child.
Disney princesses are their own celebrity.
That's true. I did want to be Mulan.
All right.
What about you, Zach? Did you read any teen women's magazines growing up?
Maybe not teens. I mean, every guy has read Cosmo. I don't care what they would totally lie to you.
Really? Is this like
yes.
a known thing?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So whenever I see you with your copy of The New Yorker, you actually have Cosmo hidden inside?
Exactly. I actually have like a magazine cover that I ordered on Amazon that's just The New Yorker.
Smart.
Okay, we have a lot of news to get to, so I'm going to move us to Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to.
Wow, there are some great ones.
Some pretty good ones. So first, we've already said that this is Feast Week. So Pope Francis celebrated the feast day with his fellow Jesuits. He had lunch with Father General Arturo Sosa and other Jesuits at their headquarters in Rome. And he also tweeted, like St. Ignatius of Loyola, let us be won over by the Lord Jesus and led by him, place ourselves at the service of others. In less inspiring news, Zach.
The mooch is out.
Oh, Lord.
Anthony Scaramucci did not last as long at the White House as my homecoming date and I did in high school.
What was it, 10 days?
10 days was all it took. And that's a lie. He did last longer than me in my homecoming date.
What do you mean? Like, as a couple?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Or on the dance floor?
Evidently, I'm a great date, but not a great boyfriend. I've heard that before. Anyway, we're bringing this up because Trump has a lot of Catholics working for him and a lot of Catholics formerly working for him. So Sean Spicer.
Bye, Spicy.
He's gone. He's Catholic, though. Fun fact. The Mooch was offended by leaks as a Roman Catholic, not by the colorful language that he used in that New Yorker interview. He is also gone after 10 days. And Trump appointed Secretary John Kelly. Wait, no, I wonder if not he's... Secretary General.
Yeah, well, yeah,
Secretary
both.
General. You can be two of those things. Secretary General John Kelly, who evidently did the sign of the cross shortly after being confirmed in. So we can assume that he is also Catholic.
Yes. So some are up, some are down.
Yep. Later, we'll go over your answers to the question, what Catholic should Trump hire and fire next? Stay tuned.
Okay. All right, what's next?
We'll go. So on to some slightly less scary Catholic stuff. Unless you're an arachnophobe, then this is going to terrify you. So a giant robotic spider named Kumo was hanging outside of Notre Dame Cathedral in Ottawa.
It has a name?
Yeah, Kumo. And it was a street theater company created it as part of Canada's 150th birthday celebration. Mm. And the Archbishop of Ottawa was shocked that people were calling this demonic, disgusting, even shameful. But I mean, come on. Like, what did he expect that people would really, like, go into mass and be okay with a robotic spider hanging outside?
Yeah.
But it's a giant. It's huge.
Okay. It is
huge. But it was only there for, like, this one display moment. Apparently, so the cathedral is across the street from a museum where they have another spider. And so they wanted, like, this... They wanted Kumo to walk over and meet the other spider.
Wait. It moved from...
Yeah, no. So the whole point was it was placed on top of the cathedral. Oh, and then they used cranes to move it over to meet this other spider whose name was... Let me... I have this. Mammon.
Okay.
And this Kumo was going to... He was lifted from the cathedral and was going to go say hi to Mammon as part of celebrating Canada 150. I don't see what you guys don't understand.
This has all the drama of a Pixar short.
I mean, after hearing Ashley describe it, it does sound kind of cute. But yeah. Still, I can see why people are terrified of this. It is huge.
Yeah. And other horrifying church news. Zach?
Dun, dun, dun. So, there is a priest in Belfast, Northern Ireland, who is horrified that there's a film festival showing The Exorcist in an abandoned church next month.
That sounds awesome.
That does sound awesome.
I would love to see The Exorcist in abandoned.
Sounds terrifying, yeah. But he finds it offensive and a little bit, you know, don't mess around with this kind of stuff.
I mean, I assume you're on his side, right, Zach?
Actually, no. What? Here, what? So here's the thing. This is about...
This is shocking.
So... I have some nuance to my, you know, one, don't mess with actual demons. Don't play with Ouija boards. Don't summon them. But you could watch a depiction, particularly about Jesuits, exorcising demons.
Yeah.
Which The Exorcist, which is based on William Peter Blatty's novel, is about.
Yeah, it's about a Jesuit.
Exorcising demons, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you're cool with this.
Well, I brought this story because my favorite thing is that the church is also used as an Italian restaurant, which the priest has no problem with.
It's going to be used as an Italian restaurant.
Right, which is just, you know, I don't know, just kind of funny.
In other news from the Isles, the British Isles, seminarians in Wales.
Seminarians and Wales?
In Wales.
Got it.
Welsh seminarians.
Okay.
We're out celebrating a ordination. They went to a bar and were kicked out. Or almost kicked out because the owners thought that they were just a bachelor party in costume.
Oh, okay.
But the best part is that according to the assistant manager, quote, the staff thought that they were a stag. We do have quite a few issues on the weekends with parties wearing fancy dress, so it is our policy to turn them away.
Don't know what stag is, don't know what fancy dress is.
Fancy dress? Oh, Lord. Okay.
But to be fair, they were wearing cassocks, so they wore dresses, basically.
Yeah.
In other news of things people are or are not wearing,
nice.
In South Korea, a nude mansion was just reopened in a very Catholic part of the country, and the local residents are very upset. So this is a mansion where people can go and do outdoor activities like hiking and playing tennis in the nude. And area Catholics are very upset. One said, whenever I go to pick herbs or hike the back mountains, I can see the nudists at their mansion. I can't just close my eyes whenever I go to the mountains, can I? No, because then you would fall off the mountain.
It's true.
So he has a point.
No, but you know, the Catholics of Florida didn't protest when they opened up the nude mansion ride at Disney.
You said that with such a straight face, too.
I was like, what?
I'm like, a nude mansion in Florida?
Someone's supposed to say, no, it's the haunted mansion. And then I'm going to say, that's why I was kicked off the ride.
Okay. God. No, but as someone who refused to get curtains for a good 4 years while living in New York, I'm gonna stand in solidarity with my nudist brothers and sisters in South Korea.
Okay. On to the next one.
Yes, finally.
More Canadian news.
A nun officiated at a Catholic wedding in Canada. I did not know this was possible, but she had the permission from her local bishop and the Vatican to preside at a wedding.
What?
Wow. I know. And so we are all dusting up our
canon law books.
Canon law books, because according to Canon 1112, quote, where there is a lack of priests and deacons, the diocesan bishop can delegate laypersons to assist at marriages.
People were very excited about this news. And the Sister Pierrette, who officiated at the wedding, said it's a beautiful step forward for women in the church.
It's interesting because on the one hand, I can imagine being a woman sitting at this wedding and just being very affected by the fact that there was a woman presiding over it. But this is also a side effect of a very severe priest shortage in this part of Canada.
Right. So the cynical view is that, you know, women and lady in general are just seen as backups for
exactly.
Priest.
Yeah. So if you were living in New York and you wanted to have a woman presiding at your wedding, canon law does not permit that because there are plenty of priests in the area. But as our editor-in-chief, Matt Malone, pointed out, he, as part of his Jesuit education, was in Guyana. And he said this is pretty much the norm in Guyana because there are huge swaths of the country where there are no priests. And there are always women pastoral associates presiding at weddings. So he said this is really the first world catching up with the third world in this regard.
So we're excited to welcome Kara Eschbach, founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of Verily Magazine. Welcome to Jesuitical.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for playing bartender. This is amazing.
Yeah, right. Really. I can't believe we already put you to work. Like, the interview hasn't even started and you're here making us drinks.
Love having a little bit of hospitality.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so what is Verily Magazine? Can you tell us how you came up, how you decided to start this?
Yeah, so we are a women's fashion and lifestyle website. We originally conceived it as a print magazine. So some people who knew us back when we started did actually have a physical print edition. But we got started because my co-founder, Janet, had actually worked at Elle Magazine when she was in college. And while she was there, sort of had a bit of a conversion, I think, both spiritually and even just about the kind of content that was being produced, and really saw that a lot of the issues that she sort of had around self-image and, you know, the way that women treat one another were directly the result of the kind of content that women's magazines produce. And so she didn't want to be a part of that. And she also realized that why can't there be a magazine out there that actually produces content that's good for women and doesn't make you feel terrible about yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, rocket science, right? And so she was actually, you know, working at another job and just kind of talking about this idea one day over brunch. And at the time, I had been working on Wall Street, but I was a magazine junkie growing up. And so when Janet brought up this idea, it really just like spoke to my heart of like, yes, this is something that we need to do for women. There needs to be a different voice out in the world. And, you know, we're young women in our 20s and we seem to be the ones who kind of have a vision to do it. Why not try?
Yeah, if you go to your website, verilymag.com right now, there's a section, Beyond Your Summer Body, which instead of like talking about how to get a six-pack abs for the summer and your perfect beach bod, it talks about like having a body positive summer and accepting your body. And that's
absolutely
really unique. I did some comparison. I just, you know, went to Cosmo and Glamour and other magazines just so I could like see what's out there right now because I don't really read women's magazine and it's very refreshing.
Thank you.
So what's like the type of like name an article that maybe Cosmo or Elle would write and then how would Verily cover that same topic but in a different way?
Maybe relationships is a good one where they'd say, you know, 10 sex tips or something, right? You know, we would have 10 ways to grow an intimacy with your partner. And everything that we would talk about is really based on research. Particularly, we lean on a couple of key groups, in particular, this guy called Dr. John Gottman, who he did all this research when he was at Stanford. And he had this thing called the Love Lab, where he can predict with about 90% accuracy whether or not a couple that is engaged will stay married based on the interactions that they have. So we use that kind of research to actually talk about lifelong relationships and the little things that you can do in very practical ways to build a healthy relationship with one another, rather than focusing on, you know, physical things that are really mostly fleeting and most of the time not even true.
You were a magazine junkie growing up. How did that affect your self-image or your approach to relationships?
Yeah, you know, I think my story is probably similar to a lot of young women's stories. I think I was very lucky that I was a college athlete. And so I had like a little bit of a appreciation for the fact that I knew that my body could do great things beyond just the way that I looked. But at the same time, had all of these negative stereotypes about it as well. It's like, oh, gosh, my shoulders are so broad. And so, you know, I always felt really unfeminine and really unattractive and kind of saw that when I went to college was the first time I'd gotten a lot of male attention. And really, I mean, I kind of went down the typical path of engaging in the hookup culture and all of those things that go with it. And it was really through that experience realizing all of these things that I've been told in women's magazines would make me happy have actually made me miserable. You know, I feel terrible about myself. I never feel empowered by dressing sexy. I feel like an object. I never feel empowered in my relationships. I feel like I'm being used. And that kind of turned my whole worldview on its head and was like, if all of this stuff is a lie, like, where is the truth? And I mean, that was part of me kind of reseeking my faith, but also just realizing there is actual research out there that supports healthy, lifelong relationships. And in general, none of it are things that would be what is recommended in most women's magazines for relationships.
Yeah. So it sounds like this sort of awareness was very much wrapped up in your faith. How does that influence the magazine now, or did it influence the founding of it? It's not a Catholic magazine, right?
Right. Yeah. We're totally secular. I think if you work in journalism and if you have an opinion, like, your worldview is of course coming through on that. You know, I think if you read a women's magazine, it's very clear that they have a worldview about sexuality and what that means. And I think for us, the fact that I am Catholic, what it has given me is an appreciation for just the dignity of women and kind of what kind of inherent value do people have, and therefore, how should we be treating people? Which I don't think you need to have a faith background to say, yeah, I think that there's a different vision for the way that we treat people and how we think about the way we treat women in media, in our interpersonal relationships. And for us, like, we were always very clear from the get-go that, like, we didn't want it to be a Catholic magazine. I think, you know, we originally thought it was going to be like a fashion magazine. And I think like Catholic fashion is kind of like, what does that even mean? Like, that's a ridiculous term. And I think that there's, like, as a Catholic, I would want to women to dress in a way that, like, is worthy of their dignity. But, like, that doesn't mean you have to dress in a certain style or anything like that, right? I think a lot of those kind of things become more of a way to judge other people when it's like, oh, well, are you being, like, Catholic enough the way you do something? We just didn't want to be involved in any of that. And we just thought it would be much more approachable and fresh to be like, what does it look like to be, like, a woman who values herself and doesn't give in to a lot of these other narratives?
And one of the ways that you empower women, you guys have a very specific photoshopping policy, right? You guys don't Photoshop at all. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to do that?
Yeah. So what actually happened is that we didn't think at first, it wasn't like, oh, this would be a good PR policy. It was much more that we started doing photo shoots and getting photographs back from photographers, because usually a photographer will do some editing to a photo to give you kind of like what their artistic vision is. And we are coming back with it and saying, this, like, girl looks kind of weird. Like, she doesn't really look like that, and her skin looks very funny. And so we were having this conversation with photo editors, basically saying, like, that's not the look that we want. And so we started having just a blanket policy of, you know, do not change the face or body structure. You know, don't take off freckles or moles. I would say, like, we obviously use Photoshop to correct lighting. When you have a photo right. that's too dark, like, you need to make it look the best that it can be, because a 2D photo is never going to look the way that it looks 3D in real life. And so there is some editing that is done, but we're very careful about, like, the actual person looks like the way that they look. And I think for us, what we realized, and Janet and I, was that you start to just create a template in your mind of what someone is supposed to look like and what you're supposed to be striving for when you see images over and over again. And so our thesis was that, like, if we could put forward images of women who just looked beautiful, and then maybe you on the second level are like, oh, and she's not the same typical tall, thin, whatever that you see everywhere, then maybe you might say, oh, she kind of looks like me. And like, maybe over time that would mean that somebody would kind of internalize that, well, maybe I'm beautiful too, because I'm recognizing the beauty in other women. I think we're much more apt to see the beauty in our friends than we are in ourselves. And in some ways, it's kind of allowing women to see their own beauty through somebody else by allowing those, you know, quote unquote flaws or differences to be present in the images.
Yeah. I love that, because I was also a magazine junkie growing up. But I didn't realize how I internalized the way all of these, and mostly white models, looked. You know, I'm like a woman of color. I have this really big hair. Then I got to college and I was like, I don't look like, you know, Gisele Bündchen or all of these super skinny women in these magazines. And I was just like, wait a minute, this is like really getting to me on a deep level. And as a 27-year-old, I still have to deconstruct this. So to see magazines that are committed to this, I'm like, it is really great and refreshing to see, you know, quote unquote, real women with their real flaws, you know?
What's one of your favorite things, articles or topics that Verily's taken on?
I think the things that I'm most proud of are our relationship content, and my my editor, Monica Marshall. She got married last year, so I have to think about her last name. she's really constructed a department that like speaks truth to the human heart and kind of what we really desire, and speaking to like how do we really approach relationships and dating and marriage in a healthy way. But yeah, I think in our culture department, the way we've been able to articulate just how much objectification of women happens. And a lot of times, you know, we're one of the few who are saying that like pornography is destroying marriages. Pornography is like destroying the way that women and men interact with one another, and kind of calling that out when it comes up, because I think far too often people are very blasé about it. And just the opportunity to be a different voice, because we didn't anticipate this 5 years ago, but I think we were kind of on the leading edge of a conversation about feminism that has just becomes more and more relevant. And I think it's really important to have a view of who women are that is in some ways counter to the narrative that is being told in other places. Just because Selena Gomez is standing up there naked and saying that she feels empowered by being naked doesn't mean that that's necessarily what empowerment means. And here's why. And we can, you know, think through that in a very philosophical way, not in a moralizing way.
Does Verily have a position on dating apps or that?
We're pro dating apps. Speaking of favorite articles, one of my favorite articles we did recently was two of our editors went onto Bumble as, but basically they only use Pride and Prejudice quotes to talk to guys.
That is great.
The blow by blow of it. And it was clearly funny and like really great to see just some guys totally got it. Like one guy figured out very quickly that what they were doing and responded in kind and just, you know.
That's a keeper.
Yeah. It was just like, you know, I think the thing that we can add to that conversation is like, I think we can stop wringing our hands over this stuff. Like, you know, there's, everybody would love to meet someone in person. It's hard to do that. Why not use the tools that are available to you? Use it wisely. Don't get so down about it. Like, dating should be fun. Mm-hmm. And I think we sometimes can forget that when we're like trying to find our soulmate or something. Just like having a good time. So yeah,
go. And also Bumble is pretty cool because it's like the women have to make the first contact. Like you don't have to worry about, you know, as women often we have to deal with a lot of creepers on dating apps, but Bumble really just like puts it in our hands. So
what would a guy get out of going to verilymag.com?
I wanted to ask that, but also didn't want to ask that to make it about me.
Zach.
Thanks, Ashley.
If it makes you feel better, my boyfriend reads like almost all of our relationship content. If it's not like super specific for a woman, he's actually you guys have really good advice about like relationships.
Have men giving.
We do. We do. We also, we have a gentleman speak column, which I think.
If you're looking for writers, just.
We always take pitches.
Okay. That's good to know.
Are you calling yourself a gentleman?
Fair enough. Finally. Hold, please.
But yeah, no, we, yeah, it's funny because I'll often have like guy friends of friends who will say, oh yeah, you know, my female friend sent me an article. So like I read it once or maybe twice. Like, yeah, you're one of our readers. It's fine. You can admit it. It's okay. We have guys tell us that they read because they want to know what the kind of woman who reads Verily is thinking or like wondering about and thinking about. And I think that that's true for men too, where I think that there's something about media that is normalizing, right? Like as a kid, I read women's magazines because I wanted to know like what was normal. Like, you know, my mom told me what to do about something, but like my mom didn't know how to help me with my hair. She was like, I don't know. So, you know, you're just like, they're experts. They have these opinions and there's something that like, well, when they say it, that's generally like what's normal. And in some ways, I think that that's a service that we do is kind of saying, you know, there's another opinion out here that is also totally normal. So I think having a place where people can go and be like, oh, no, these like more, you know, desires of my heart, I'm being validated somewhere. I think that's probably also true for men to say like, oh, there are women out there who like want a normal dude, who like want a guy that treats them well. And there are lots of guys who I've talked to who doubt that women really want that. They really think that women care all about like, oh, it's all about the job I have. I'm like, they probably would be fine with you having a less cool job if you treated them like a lady. Like,
yeah,
it's not rocket science.
Yeah. The whole like having a good job thing is just, that's only as useful. Yeah. I'm going to pitch
you
this,
would,
you know,
say being, that guy who works at a nonprofit
journalism magazine. That's right. I would also like to advocate for, it's more important that you're interesting beyond the initial, this is my boyfriend who does this.
Yeah. You can only listen to someone talk about finance for so many dates.
So many.
We're going to wrap up shortly. But first, we ask all of our guests if they could canonize one person, Catholic or not, living or dead, fictional, non-fictional, can be a Jane Austen character. Who would it be?
I mean, I wish I had known about the fictional character thing. So I was like, I feel like I need to hedge on this. Like, I don't even know real saints well enough to give an answer to that. I think somebody who I would at least recommend that you read. I'll like hedge on my canonization thing.
Boo,
but
go for it. Say, you should definitely. I will canonize.
Oh, I can't. I love the book A Canticle for Leibowitz, and there's the priest at the very end of it, whose name I can't remember, has this amazing piece about basically like euthanasia, and it's amazing. So you should definitely read that book, and like he would be my pick, but. Thinking of like a real person, and just thinking America being run by Jesuits, I loved the book by Father Chizik. Have you ever read
Walter Chizik?
Yeah.
God in Russia.
So not that one. The other one, He Leadeth Me, is like my favorite spiritual reading. I read that like once a year, and he has some amazing passages about his time when he's in solitary confinement that's just like so great for spiritual reading. So also that's that great one.
What do you say when you go on the Dominicans podcast?
I would go back to my original answer.
Canticle for Leibowitz.
And Kara, where can people find you?
Yeah, so everywhere on every like social media platform, we are at Verily Mag, VerilyMag. So that's verilymag.com, Instagram, Facebook, all of that kind of stuff. Verily Mag. That's where we are.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sulfur in the footprints that you leave. Fire.
Now it's time for some listener feedback. First, our Twitter poll. We asked which Catholic the Trump administration should hire next and fire next. So, as you can imagine, we've got some good answers. So, Holly said Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway are the ones to fire and replace with Stephen Colbert. Not that I think SC would accept. Yeah, I don't think he would either. I think he has way too much good material to work with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Bannon and Kellyanne are making his show a lot easier.
I bet.
Then Lauren wrote in, no Catholic or anyone who believes in the Gospels should serve in this administration.
Fair.
Okay.
Christina wrote, no Catholic should work for that bully. Mercy lacking, totally embodiment of anti-Catholic values is D-Trump.
Ashley McKinless? McCandless?
I think it's pronounced McKinless.
Oh, yeah, that one. She said, 1, Sean Hannity for White House Communications Director. 2, Sean Hannity, 3 weeks later.
You're laughing at your own joke right now.
I know. I love that she introduced it, laughed at it, clapped at it.
And Kieran had a similar style to this joke. He said, Chris Christie and, wait for it, Chris Christie.
Nice.
And there's some great GIFs to go along with that from both he and us.
For sure. And then Celeste finally said, Joan of Arc for both scenarios. She has the will and the moral conscience to live and die to save a corrupt government. Great answer, Celeste.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. We have a lot of fun on Twitter. So if you're not following us already, you totally should at Jesuitical Show. And maybe you're off Twitter because most people are abandoning it, but it's a lot of fun. And so I recommend it. And you will also find out what the president is dictating before everyone else, because that's how he communicates.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Some emails. Lou Mason responding to our episode with Nick Rapatrazone about the Keepers said he actually signed a petition on this case today in which he attached a note, part of which said, without the full light of day on this despicable part of our past, we allow a blessed heritage, loved city, and the innocent descendants of holy souls to remain forever scandalized. So he thanked the Jesuits for their paying attention to this issue. I think a lot of Catholics are heartened by the fact that their fellow Catholics in the media are paying attention to the Keepers. So,
yeah, thanks, Lou.
Yeah, and we got one more email from Pamela, who wrote in from the Rio Grande Valley, who said she was really desolated after the election in 2016. And as a result of that, she had started going to Mass again. And she was, you know, really taken and, you know, really into a lot of stuff, sort of getting into her faith. And as a part of that, she started wondering about Catholic podcast. And she said she spent months searching, months for something. And eventually she came across us online. And she wrote in to say, I don't have any Catholic friends, so it's nice to hear other perspectives, especially the consolations and desolations. God brought us together, digitally speaking. Pamela, we're glad that you found us, that God brought us together, and that you are now in this community. But to all you listeners, one of your friends could be in the middle of those months and months of searching. Mm-hmm. So give them a break and tell them about this podcast.
That's true.
Yes, please.
No one wants to be in the depths of Google for months. So help them out.
Speaking of consolations and desolations, it's time for the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God.
Ashley, what do you got this week?
Yeah, so this past weekend, I was at the Kent Ideas Festival. I was part of the America team that went there to get ideas about the kind of things we should be covering and get ideas about authors.
I have a lot of ideas. I don't know why you guys just didn't sit me down for a couple hours.
Zach, we wanted to give you a break because you're just doing so much.
Fair. Yeah. So no, it was, I am a nerd in college. I don't think I missed a class ever. And this weekend was basically just like going to college lecture after college lecture, but like no test at the end. So I was just soaking it all in, and it was really, a renewing experience for me. I really came into my faith in college when I had the chance to approach it from an intellectual angle. So this weekend kind of regrounded me in that. There was actually surprisingly no mention of religion at this conference of ideas, except to like make fun of people who have religious values. But it was still very enriching to like go into these lectures and be like, okay, so what's the Catholic take on this? So I saw God again in the ideas. What about you, Zach?
So I'm bringing a desolation this week, and it's sort of related to some of my previous consolations. I've talked about being welcomed into new families, new communities, and this week I found myself really missing my family at home. One of the upsides of social media is that I can see all these like beautiful pictures and Snapchats of my new baby cousin. The downside, I don't know if it's a dark side, but I'm super aware of what I'm missing out on.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful that I have young hip cousins who are great at documenting, you know, life. And so I'm in on their Snapchat. And my dad just texted me.
Aww.
That's super cute. He's probably like, why haven't you called? But so my desolation this week is, you know, being aware of the relationship that I'm missing out on, yeah. I think. So social media induced FOMO is my desolation.
I'm really jealous that you're still getting new cousins. Like, cousins were a very big part of my life, and the fact that you're still getting more of them.
I'm the second oldest on my mom's side.
Yeah, I was always on like the younger side of the cousins. So like, it's always been a mystery to like what it would be like to be like the old cousin.
I'm like number 2 of 30 or something like that.
2 of 30? Yeah, wow.
That's only on one side.
That's a big family.
Yeah. That's awesome.
My aunt just had her 12th. Mm. So yeah. Congrats to her.
Olga. All right, Olga.
So I've got a consolation this week. I was up in Lake George, New York, with a bunch of college friends. We were celebrating our 10-year anniversary, friendiversary. We all met in 2007 when we started at Fordham. So we decided to like do this trip and go up there together. We brought our significant others, and we're all from the city. So nature is not something any of us did, or most of us didn't do growing up. So it was very nice. We got up there. There was no Wi-Fi. There was very few times was I able to even like check emails or even Slack. But we were just really out there and completely disconnected from the city, like very much out of our comfort zone. We went hiking and it was extremely empty. We were hiking. It was 8 of us. And these like 3 people on ATVs came out of nowhere and were just like, hey, you're on the wrong trail. Like, just go down. So 15 minutes later, we get to the end of the trail. They're waiting for us. And they're just like, we wanted to make sure you guys found your way. And when you're done, come get beers at our place. And we were all just like,
I've seen Get Out. I know how this ends.
Exactly. We were all, number one, we were all like, we're 8 people of color in the woods. Like, we've seen this movie. We're not going to do this. But it really just kind of forced us to step outside of the city. And just for me personally, I was able to just be out there with nature and with people in a community that looked nothing like the Bronx. So it was really nice. Kind of made me connect to with God on a level that I don't get to do down here in the city. So that was nice.
Nice. Yeah. As someone who drives ATVs and offers booze to people in the woods.
Is that normal? It's okay. Honestly, I was like, you know what? This guy's going to come out of nowhere in the woods. And we can't call anyone because there's no Wi-Fi up here. There's no service.
That's true.
But no, it was a really beautiful experience. So
that's awesome.
That was my consolation.
All right. I hope you get to go hiking again. In fact, I'll go hiking with you.
Thank you.
All right. Time to wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Adult supervision provided by Carrie Weber. Again, Sam Sawyer is on retreat.
He, like Scaramucci, was only in for like 10 days.
Research help from Jack McCordick, Anna Marchese, and Emma Winters. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. You can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show and subscribe to Jesuitical on iTunes and leave us a review. We had a very nice one from Neil Avery this week, who works at Cristo Rey Milwaukee.
Yeah, as a JV there, so.
Yeah, and he said in the summer there's not a lot going on at the school, so
great time to binge on
Jesuitical.
We'll take it.
And finally, send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org.
And one final, this is our last week with our interns, so.
No, really? What?
I don't know how to break this to you, Ashley, but yeah, they're gone. So to Jack, Anna, and Emma, thank you so much for a great summer.
Thank you guys for all the work you've done.
Yeah, you guys are, that was weird.
Sorry.
That is the sound of one hand clapping.
Sorry.
That's the maker's melt clapping.
Anyway, thank you guys. You've been a big part of this, so we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. For America Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura. We will see you next week.